This week on Education Radio.
Nothing else is working in these schools. We have to try something. That's the rationale. And it's astonishing. It's jaw-dropping. It's pitiful. I think if the TSA course members were going into white upper-middle-class schools, there's no way it would happen.
Because there are a lot of people who are incredibly bright and talented. Does it not necessarily mean they're good at teaching?
Funders see Teach for America is a clever way to crack the ed schools, crack the unions, eliminate seniority, eliminate tenure, and turn teaching into not a profession, but a revolving door where young people come and go and make few demands.
Welcome to Education Radio. I'm Deborah Keisch-Polin.
And I'm Neha Singhal.
Last week, we began a two-part investigation of the organization Teach for America. Neha Singhal, a graduate student in social justice education at UMass Amherst and former TFA recruit, is joining us as a guest host for these two programs.
In part one, we looked at TFA recruitment and training, TFA's approach to diversity, and TFA's impact on teacher education. This week, we'll explore TFA's connection to corporate education reform and its impact on professional teachers and their unions.
It is important to point out that Teach for America is intimately connected to a much broader network of think tanks, companies, policymakers, corporate philanthropists, corporate media, elected officials, and legislators, all working together to implement what is now known as education reform. Again, the tactics that TFA employs are part and parcel of a much larger corporate agenda that views education as an untapped market segment. Neha, you also did some research into these pieces after leaving your TFA training. Can you talk a bit about what you found out?
When I quit Teach for America, I was still very curious about this organization that I had signed up to be a part of. So I was looking and doing some research into them. And one night, I found out that the very first corporation that had funded Wendy Kopp's project was Union Carbide. And Union Carbide, just a few years prior in the 80s, was the reason for the Bhopal disaster in India, which caused thousands of deaths and injuries that still today hurt the people who are in Bhopal. The CEO fled the country. He took no responsibility of what happened. And I wondered, wait, an organization that had just committed a massive human rights violation was funding a social justice organization? That didn't make sense to me. Why would Wendy Kopp accept money from that kind of corporation? So the more I looked into it, the scarier things got. Recently, the research that I've done, I found out that it's not surprising to see the biggest donations for Teach for America are coming from Walmart and the Gates Foundation and the Broad Foundation and Goldman Sachs Corporation. Again, why would these corporations fund Teach for America, an organization that's supposedly committed to ending inequity? Because the truth is, these kinds of corporations benefit from the status quo, right? They benefit from structural poverty, from institutionalized racism. It's really impossible that these organizations would care about social justice or would really care about the achievement gap for students of color when their sole purpose is really to increase their bottom line, which is their profit. So what's happening is these corporations are funding Teach for America, and we see that it's no coincidence then that Teach for America alumni who get involved in the, quote, education reform movement, they are seen advocating for free market solutions in education. Those solutions include merit pay, ending tenure, increasing testing, putting up more charters, eliminating benefits, and job security. So what's the link between all these different types of solutions? Well, it's all undermining teachers' unions. It's all undermining workplace rights. These are things that corporations care about. This is why corporations are funding Teach for America, because Teach for America is essentially about being anti-union and indoctrinating a generation of obedient workers. These obedient workers who will go on to perpetuate the model of standardized testing and one-size-fits-all education, even outside of the classroom. Even when they go on to become doctors or lawyers or workers in the corporate world, they won't question. They'll be easily exploitable. They will foster anti-union tendencies because of their work with Teach for America. On top of that, these corporations are funding an organization that's not only creating a workforce of obedient teachers, but also Teach for America is actually creating a teaching workforce that will now create an obedient disposition among its students as future workers. So once examining the true TFA agenda, it's pretty clear to see why these corporations want to fund TFA, because they're very caught up in making sure the free market status quo continues to perpetuate itself. It's not as if these corporations care about social justice.
As the connections deepen among organizations like TFA and policymakers, teacher prep programs, and corporations, it becomes easier to see that TFA is following a similar formula across the nation. Working with superintendents coming out of places like the Broad Superintendents Academy, which is a strong ally of TFA, using these relationships to create partnerships and networks among districts to reserve slots for TFA recruits far in advance of the start of the school year, and ultimately getting those core members into policy and administrative positions, both locally and nationally. We hear again from Professor of Education and author Barbara Veltri, who talks about this pattern.
What I get really concerned about is, why do we have funds where governors are putting money into Teach for America? Why are we having the districts pay finder's fees of between $3,000 and $5,000 a year for each Teach for America teacher? That's $10,000 after 2 years. And so you're seeing that happen where school boards are wrangling with that in Alabama this year, in South Carolina this year, where they've come in new to the community. And one of the things that I really want people to get from this interview is the fact that when the district superintendent signs a contract with Teach for America, they are not just placing core members in hard-to-staff positions. They are placing them across the spectrum. That's number one. And number two, they're signing a contract for multi-year engagement. So in other words, you have superintendents like Dr. Covington who comes into Kansas City and he brings Teach for America in. And then when he leaves, core members are still continuing to come in. There's a pattern here. It's not just the Teach for America group. The Teach for America group itself is working in conjunction with many high-profile people, weaving a network. And that network is supported, for example, by superintendents. So if a superintendent is hired to come into Kansas City, for example, I have data from core members who tell me that the superintendent was so wonderful to them and spoke to them and said, you know, you're here for reasons of innovation and you're going to make change. We need this and we're so glad you're here. And because you're here, we were able to cut our budget and we released 157 teachers. And one of them said to me, I had a real sinking feeling in my stomach when I heard that. And the reason, Barb, is because both of my parents were teachers in Missouri. Or another one said to me, I never thought that we were going to be displacing teachers, and that's why we were here. And of course, what happened was, after there were some issues, if you have any issue as a TFA teacher, that's an issue that's related to students being out of control in your classroom. If it comes on you, you don't have enough classroom management. You have to go back and prepare. Are you not looking at our mission here? Are you not dedicated to the philosophy that all children can learn? So it became something that was a stress on the students, and then they immediately saw a change in the attitude of the superintendent. And you know that in Kansas City, the certified teachers, the teachers in the union, they did lose positions. And they went to the school board, and they didn't have any real support. And the school district in Kansas City has now been taken over by the state. And you saw what happened when Superintendent Covington, who graduated from the Broad Superintendent's Academy, now he's in Detroit, and you see the same thing.
That was Barbara Veltri, talking about the formula that TFA employs wherever it has a presence. Next, Barbara shares a story of how a traditionally certified teacher was impacted by these contracts that TFA sets up with school districts.
She had graduated with a 4.0 in teacher education, double major, Spanish and early childhood and elementary education, from a university in the Midwest. What Allison was very concerned about is that she flew to Atlanta. She went into a school, she had applied for a position as a teacher, and she documents in this letter to me, which is in the back of the book in the appendix with her permission, that she was promised a position, and the fact that she spoke Spanish and she had worked with early childhood, and she said that she logged 1,500 hours of practicum so that she learned her craft before as a beginning teacher. And that is not what we see with Teach for America teachers who are learning on the job. She went back to the school after graduation because she hadn't heard anything. And the principal was so moved that she said, Allison, I am so sorry, but I cannot hire you. We have a quota from the district, and I have to hire a Teach for America teacher. I am terribly sorry. And that is what's happening right now. As I am speaking to you, and it is February, we have core members who are already assigned their grade level and their district. It's February. They're seniors. There are people who are assigned special education, and they haven't taught a child with special needs before. It's not really ethical.
Again, that was Barbara Veltri. Next, we return to Associate Professor of Education Philip Kovacs. Education Radio producer Tim Scott and I talked with Philip about how the TFA formula has been enacted where he lives and works in Alabama.
Sunday morning, 8 o'clock, one of my colleagues called and said, have you seen the local paper, a front page article in the local paper on Teach for America? Teach for America is coming to Huntsville. He was beside himself. TFA had been on my radar. It wasn't really anything that I had paid attention to because there's only so much outrage people can focus on at any given point in time. So I knew that I'd read by many people I respected that it was problematic. Didn't know much about it. So I went and bought the paper, and the front page story was, yes, that the school board had approved this $500,000 at this point in time contract with Teach for America. And then what happened over the course of a few weeks was it would be let out that it was actually not $500,000, that it was $900,000. And then actually it's $1.3 million. And oh, by the way, now it's $1.7 million. And in fact, it's not even capped at that. The way the contract is written is year one, 30 teachers or more. Year two, 40 teachers or more. Year three, 40 teachers or more. So the language gets really tricky, right, because it's this or more. And I'd gone to the school board with my concerns, and they were pretty much just brushed off. But it looks like we do have some legal recourse, and we'll see how that pans out.
In the case in the districts you work with, are there teacher shortages?
That's a great question, because I know this is almost sacrilege, but if there was a teacher shortage here and there was someone who wanted to come in and help us out because there was a teacher shortage, I would be all about it. However, there's not a teacher shortage here. The city of Huntsville laid off over the course of the past 2 years 300 teachers. Plenty of people looking for jobs, my own graduates looking for jobs.
So the superintendent is the leading force behind bringing these core members. And so could you talk about how that got set up and what the connection is there?
I can't speak with 100% certainty about how A led to B led to C. But the superintendent was trained by the Broad Foundation. And the Broad Foundation is a massive supporter of Teach for America. So it only seemed natural that he would go to Teach for America to fill positions. Now, one of the things I asked the school board when I addressed them concerning this was, you know, this is a $1.whatever million contract because we didn't know what the figure was at that point in time. Were there any competing bids? There are all kinds of alternative education programs out there for certification, right? So it seems natural that coming from the organization that produced him, he's come in with sort of a scripted, preset agenda. And one of those things was bringing in Teach for America to work in Title I schools.
Can you talk more specifically about the rationale that the superintendent and some of these school board members are providing? Because we know that education reformers consistently hide behind social justice rhetoric and really deceptive rationales for policies, but also when it comes to Teach for America. What is the rationale they're providing?
Well, that's a great question. That's the question I've been asking, and that's the question I can't get answered. Here is the best response from the president of the Board of Education is, nothing else is working in these schools. We have to try something. That's the rationale, and it's astonishing. It's jaw-dropping. It's pitiful. And the only reason I think there's not more significant blowback from the community is that the people who are most affected by this are the least likely to be politically active. Number one, they may not even know that it's going on. Number two, a lot of them are working too much to be able to engage in any sort of organized resistance. So I think if the TFA course members were going into white upper-middle-class schools, there's no way it would happen. But since it's going into poor minority schools whose parents, for a variety of reasons, can't stop it, it's not going to be stopped. But the justification that they're using, again, this is the best they've given, is nothing else has worked. Really what this is a national experiment on poor kids. It's taking untested, untried, uncertified corps members, and I'm not going to use the term teacher because they haven't been trained to be teachers, and letting them learn, to borrow from Barbara Vetri here, letting them learn to teach on other people's kids. And the experiment, by the data that TFA provides, is failing.
That was Philip Kovacs talking about how the TFA formula is being enacted in Alabama.
Next, we'd like to explore what the impact of all of this is at the school and classroom level, with the way TFA demonizes teachers and their unions by promoting labor as flexible and expendable. Deborah Polin and Tim Scott talk with Philip Kovacs about this.
Teach for America recruits work themselves to the bone in those positions and are often young and unmarried and childless. And when they come in as this obedient worker into that space, that I imagine that could be appealing to our principal.
No, I think it's an absolutely brilliant statement. Listen, you're fresh out of graduate, or you're fresh out of your undergraduate. You get what's equivalent to the Peace Corps and has as much aura of amazing service that you're about to engage in. So you go in with this really sort of noble agenda, and you get there and you're not married, you've got no kids, you have very few obligations, so you can work absolutely yourself to the bone. And many of them do, right? Many of that, there are reports of people working themselves so long that they get sick. And then you're done after 2 years, and you look at the dropout rate and the burnout rate, and you see, well, yeah, this is why they've only stayed 2 or 3 years, because they work so hard that they fall apart and they have to quit.
Teach for America, as Deborah and you suggest, creates this exploitable pool of labor. It's an arrangement that serves one of the primary goals of neoliberalism, really, when it comes to creating a flexible workforce, right? Flexible meaning temporary contract labor, non-benefited, low pay, and of course, with that at will, and which is about creating an obedient workforce. So it gets at the heart of union busting, too.
Right. And the irony is that the states with strong unions on test scores look better. So the whole argument that it's just the union, right, that's causing these problems is ridiculous. But I'm glad that you brought up all of those points. I wanted to mention the name of someone who just completed their master's work at Georgia State University. It's Jameson Brewer. He went through a traditional teacher education program, and then he went to work for Teach for America, and he wrote his master's thesis on it. If you send me an email, I'll send you a copy. He's more than happy for people to read it. It's astonishing in terms of this cult of the individual, this cult of service and this burnout. But and part of it is you're right. You know, if we can get people to come in here for just 2 years and then go on to do something else, we don't have to pay a pension. We don't have to pay benefits. You know, ultimately, it saves the district. You know, at first, I thought, wow, the district's wasting all this money, $1.7 million. And I'm thinking, well, actually, if they get enough of this, they'll be saving money because they don't have to support or develop a workforce. And the losers are going to be the people at the bottom of the economic spectrum, people they claim to be helping.
And they'll be saving money, and they also won't have to deal with resistance because there can be no organized resistance.
They'll never develop a cohesive organized resistance. And what's unfortunate, though, is there isn't resistance anyway. We're doing a very poor job of raising teachers to be public intellectuals that I've called for about, 20 years ago by Henry Giroux, individuals who will speak out intelligently about the conditions inside of their buildings. And it's really a cult, especially with what, you know, with the economy being perpetually uncertain. But individuals here are terrified for their jobs, and dozens of people have said to me, thank you so much for speaking out. There's no way we could do it because we're worried about losing our jobs. They're, I think, very close to getting rid of tenure in the state of Alabama, and the superintendent has made it clear that tenure doesn't matter in terms of hiring and firing. I think that the next year and a half here, legally, are going to be fascinating.
That was Philip Kovacs talking about what is expected of TFA recruits and how this impacts a professional teaching force. Neha, does anything that Philip talked about resonate with you and your experience?
Yeah, as we've mentioned before, TFA recruits mainly young college graduates who don't have family obligations in the region where they're teaching. So, of course, they're willing to work 10 to 15-hour days because they know that their commitment to teaching is a short-term 2 years. So they don't mind working these really unreasonable hours, even if it means risking their mental health and well-being. In my 2 years in Texas, I personally witnessed a lot of teachers struggling with depression and anxiety. On top of that, finding it difficult actually to even speak up about it or seek support, because Teach for America would then view these Teach for America core members as making excuses for why their students weren't getting the test scores that Teach for America wanted them to. I even had local friends in Texas who were teachers, not through Teach for America, but through traditional education programs. And, you know, they just felt like they didn't get the red carpet treatment that the TFA teachers did because they couldn't compete with TFA teachers. They wanted to work hard, and they did work hard as teachers, but they couldn't work the 70 to 80 hours a week and coach volleyball and tutor on Sundays and stay after school because they had other obligations. They had families, and they refused to be exploited for their labor because they didn't want to burn out in their first year.
I also talked with Jameson Brewer, someone who is not only a traditionally certified teacher, but who has a strong critique of TFA, about his interactions with other core members around these issues.
Jameson has a telling story about the indoctrination that TFA attempts to instill in its core members from early on. A story that is so utterly reflective of larger discourse in ed reform that bad teachers are the problem. And TFA tells its core members, you are the solution. Here is Jameson.
I found it really interesting that you had that dialogue, that back and forth dialogue with another TFA core member on Anthony Cody's blog. How do you interact with other core members around these issues?
Sure. I think as I have conversations with second year core members and alumni, I find that they're a bit more understanding of some of the negative downsides to Teach for America, and they're not as starry eyed as some of the newer ones. And I've been able to have a lot of good conversations and informative conversations about their feelings of the academic backbone specifically. But when I talk to first-year core members, in fact, I recall being in my cohort, because as a core member, you team teach for 18 hours, which is your total training time, with either two or three other core members. We had to come up with a management plan, a behavior management plan for our classroom. And I said, look, we don't have to use it exactly, but let me tell you what I did when I student taught. Well, another core member turned to me and said, look, it's people like you, people who are traditionally trained that aren't doing it right. And that's why I have to be here to fix it. So I don't want to hear anything from you. And so she had already embodied that idea that it's her. And specifically in this case, that it's her through Teach for America that's going to be the savior. And so as they're coming in, I see them with this sort of disillusionment. They embody this model. Some of them throw it off as they realize that, hey, there's really only so much that I can do. Even if I do 100%, students will still struggle. And then there are some that just hold true to it.
So to continue to get a sense of how TFA's agenda contributes to the deprofessionalization of teachers, we turn to the president of the Chicago Teachers Union and nationally board certified teacher, Karen Lewis.
So I think that if you look at what the general idea for Teach for America is, it sounds really good on paper. Where we have a problem is that the commitment is extremely narrowly focused. Originally, it was designed for hard-to-fill vacancies, and right now, we don't have hard-to-fill vacancies. We have teacher layoffs. So once we have teachers being laid off from jobs, there really is no reason to hire people who are still basically unqualified to do this work. That's one of the problems. The second problem is that it's a temporary job, so which tends to deprofessionalize. People work for a couple of years and then they go on to other careers. One of the problems with that is the effect on the stability in the classrooms that they leave. You work for 2 years, and then all of a sudden now you have public policy experience, which is so insulting to the profession. Because part of being young and idealistic is that, you know, you want to do a great job, you see things. You also then see the system from a very, very narrow focus, and then all of a sudden, because you are who you are and you have this amazing institution backing you up, you have the ability to make policy. So that's a problem. The other issue is that even studies that we don't necessarily agree with clearly start talking about what it is to be a teacher your first year. The first year of teaching is really kind of difficult, and even though people think they can jump right in. And it's like you need a lot of help. You need a lot of guidance and mentoring, and that's something that has never been looked at appropriately. And those who choose to make teaching a career, we appreciate and we enjoy. And again, as far as individual members of cohorts, I don't think we have an issue with that. Our issue is this juggernaut called Teach for America that is an engine for going in a direction we don't think we need to go in, which is making this job a temporary job and deprofessionalizing it. Because there are a lot of people who are incredibly bright and talented. Does it not necessarily mean they're good at teaching?
Right. You know, it seems that on district-wide levels now they're developing these contracts that bring in all these core members. And I see the appeal because it is a flexible workforce. They're ultimately going to be cheaper. They talk about these idealistic, super bright young people who come in and they know they're only there for 2 years. And so that kind of worker is a very different worker than a teacher who's committed to the long haul.
Right. And that's not a sustainable model because it precludes developing the kinds of relationships that are required to teach in the most challenging circumstances.
That was President of the Chicago Teachers Union, Karen Lewis, talking about how TFA contributes to the deprofessionalization of teachers. Tanya Kapner has been a teacher and union activist in Oakland, California since the mid-90s. She currently teaches high school in Oakland, is a teacher union activist, and is also a civil rights activist with the organization BAM, which stands for the Coalition to Defend Affirmative Action, Integration, and Immigrant Rights by Any Means Necessary. Oakland has a strong Teach for America presence, and education radio producer Tim Scott and I talked with Tanya about the difference between corporate education reform efforts versus what she thinks is essential to increase equity for all students and how TFA plays into this. TFA's success, as with all education reform organizations, depends on weakening teachers' unions. So we also spent time talking with Tanya about the importance of teachers' unions in advocating for students and strengthening public education.
How have you experienced the impact of education reform policies in your work as a teacher and as a union activist?
When we talk about education reform, there's really two kind of opposite things. There's what teachers in the classroom feel we need for support and to really work with the students for a quality education, which is funding of public education. But the whole quote-unquote education reform movement has been the opposite of that. And what we've seen instead is experienced teachers being really disrespected and newer teachers not having a support to stay in the teaching. So Teach for America in Oakland has been basically just really high turnover rate. You know, there may be some good well-intentioned folks in it, but it's not a program for people to become and stay teachers in an urban district. And in fact, people are kind of taught to not collaborate with the more experienced teachers that know those communities. They're taught to kind of disrespect or not take any kind of tact of working well with those people. Now, that's not to say every member of the group does that, but in terms of their strategy and their philosophy, they're promoting privatization instead of public education. Like they're saying it's the teachers that are the failure of public education and that, you know, what we should do instead is just cycle through teachers really quickly and maybe most kids will be in charter schools is what we've seen in terms of Oakland.
Yeah, I appreciate that, talking about TFA core members coming in and displacing oftentimes experienced teachers, but also your experience of Teach for America core members, how they impact students and student learning.
I'm not disrespecting people that go into that program, but the philosophy of the program is anti-union, is anti-experienced teacher, and is assuming that just because somebody went to an Ivy League school that they would somehow know more about pedagogy, like how to teach in an urban classroom, than somebody that's been working there their whole lives, and that's just not the case. And I think we need to work together to have a teaching profession that has funding, is not segregated, is equal for the students, and that's going to take coming from the communities, the parents, the students, the teachers together, not substituting an outside program like Teach for America, you know, for like a two-year commitment.
I appreciate what you said about these individuals coming in, and if you have no negative feeling about those individuals, they may really want to address these issues. And then as soon as they get into the training, however, they are trained in this discourse of education reform, which promotes this individualistic thinking that the TFA core members and TFA as an organization have the answer, and that traditionally trained teachers do not, and that they are part of the problem.
Right. And I mean, honestly, the answers are often with the students. Students, you know, in the school district that I teach in Oakland are really, really politically savvy because of the challenging experiences they've had in life, really critical thinkers. It's very important to those young people to have teachers that are dedicated to their communities in their long term, working with them, advocating for them to push for their future and for their rights to education, rather than feeling given up on with what we've seen with privatization as a program of ongoing school closures, of forced reconstitutions, so teachers that they've known for a long time being taken away from them and things like that. I mean, stability is really important in, you know, city schools and any school, people that you can know and trust and work with. I mean, the young people have a lot to say about their own education. It's not, I mean, the answers aren't coming from outside these communities. It's really, how do we work together, the students, the teachers, the parents, to get what we need for a real quality public education? A theory that says that 2 years in, 2 years out is somehow better is just really destabilizing and wrong for students in terms of their needs.
How would you describe the significance of teachers having unions and the quality of education students receive?
Oh, it's incredibly important. I mean, to me, the whole reason I'm involved in the teachers union is because it's absolutely, to me, the same as the fight for civil rights and equality for, you know, Oakland, largely Black and Latino and immigrant communities, working class communities to have a quality education. I mean, teachers unions, we have several million members and we are nationwide, and we were to be using that strength that we have and that support we have from the communities, I think even more, we need to really take the initiative and do that, because it's cliche, but it's really true. Like, you know, our work conditions are the students' education conditions. I mean, the teachers union is able to advocate for a set of educational conditions that benefit the students. Smaller class sizes, funding for the school, stability by having a range of teachers, including more experienced teachers there. The teachers union is able to advocate for more programs, you know. So for example, there's disparities, like our flatland schools don't have enough advanced placement honors type programs or electives. We've had a big fight against layoffs of art and music teachers, and we've been able to maintain some of those programs, for example, for elementary school kids. The district wanted to get rid of every single music preparation and art preparation teacher in our elementary schools. We were able to back that off by organizing with the community about the importance of music and art for all students, and not accepting a kind of double standard of quote-unquote tough love and military-style drill education for Black and Latino students versus creative thinking for white and suburban students. Like, we reject that. So yeah, the unions are really important to defending quality education. I think they've been one of the biggest obstacles to total privatization and taking away of what Americans assume is a right, public education, but which is not what a whole layer of politicians wants to continue. On the one hand, the unions are really important to defending public education. On the other hand, I'd like to see, and I think the unions need to be doing more to take that up, not to go along with the flow of privatization, to really stand up for experienced teachers' rights and understand that to do that, we've got to side with the movements we're seeing, like of college students, of high school students, against privatization. At UC Berkeley, they've been fighting fee hikes. They've been fighting to double the number of Black and Latino students there. And I mean, that's something that our union can be a strong part of. And if we do that, we're going to force more resources into our K-12 schools as well by saying, hey, public education in California and across this nation needs to be prioritized. So it's important, but we need to be doing more with the community. We need to understand this is not just like a trade union question. This is like a civil rights question, because the whole notion of the right of every young person to public education is totally under attack right now. And it's really bipartisan. And we just have to say the truth as teachers that we're going to stand up and get the money, because it's there. It just needs to go to education.
What you're saying about the union and teachers advocating for students is so important as part of the conversation, the national discourse right now, for that piece of it to be heard. Because what I hear in the education reform discourse is that unions and teachers' rights come at the expense of students.
Yep, and it's the exact opposite of what is said when they say it's unions versus the community. In fact, it's the exact opposite. With having a strong teachers union that can fight for improving quality education for the students, that also is a way to help empower the students to advocate, because a lot of academic freedom issues, like to be an advocate for public education, come through this. Like, I've been able to participate with students in, we've attended field trips to the Ninth Circuit court cases on affirmative action, on the Arizona case around immigrant rights. We've been able to have field trips to UC Berkeley to work with students there for diversity and more Black and Latino students. And that's the kind of thing that is like absolutely not allowed in the whole kind of charter school skill and drill type framework. The idea of public education is that young people should have access to that regardless of their class and race background, to be able to be leaders for the next generation. And I think that standing up for public education empowers that and brings that forward. I think that a lot of the privatization, like saying, oh, class size doesn't matter, oh, it's the teachers that are the problem, oh, let's shut down the public schools and just be able to pick and choose who goes to a charter school, kick them out before testing, which is what they do a lot. A lot of that is actually to try to prepare young people for like a more second class future. They don't want young people to have their eyes on the stars for the future. The concept of public education as a right being under attack is specifically to try to make young people feel like it's a privilege if they get any scrap of education, or that they have to fight each other for that instead of like get access to a wealth of knowledge that can develop them as leaders.
That was Tanya Kapner, teacher, union activist, and civil rights activist, talking about the importance of unions to strong public schools and increased equity and opportunity for all students. This is Education Radio. We'll be back after a short break.
It may have started with the Easter Bunny or St. Nicholas, even more ridiculous, a tooth fairy. From there we're forced to recite the pledge, Hail Mary. One nation under God, why us? Don't question, son, you're burning hell. Pay attention to the lies that we're told to tell. Teacher teaches us Columbus was a hero. He stole lands, he stole lives of so-called Indians. From the Tainos to the Africans. Respect Thomas Jefferson? He molested Sally Hemings. And now they say Reagan was a great man. The godfather of crack babies? Denier of the AIDS plague? I ran fast as I could to the library to find out they trace the books I read. These lies got me surrounded. There's a war on truth. Ain't it on me? It started with that first lost truth. Lies, it's all lies, everything they say. Lies, they keep telling lies, we hear them every day. Do you think that we don't know that you're up to no good when you're telling lies? They say milk does a body good.
This is Education Radio. I'm Deborah Keish-Polin.
And I'm Neha Singhal.
Today we are exploring the organization Teach for America. A reminder here is that TFA's goal is not to produce teachers, and they make no effort to hide this fact. They are uninterested in bolstering the teaching profession. In fact, they depend on creating a myth of bad teaching in schools in order to continue filling schools with their recruits. They do not expect those recruits to stay in teaching. Rather, they expect them to be trained in the tenets of education reform, that poverty and social conditions are irrelevant, standardized test data is the only valid form of measuring student and teacher success. And then they go on to be leaders and policymakers who will continue to open up space for these kinds of reforms to maintain traction. Let's be clear here, TFA is not a teacher ed preparatory program. It is a pipeline for future ed reformers. Let's return to Barbara Veltri to see what she has to say about the goals of TFA.
See with Teach for America and how it's playing into this is that Teach for America says that anyone could teach. You don't need to go to an education school. But you're seeing that you have now major, major tentacles of how Teach for America is connected with finishing up 2 years. Then now you happen to be someone who can head up a charter school, and then you can have charter schools in locations bringing in more TFA core members. And so the people who are leading some of the charter schools, they might have 2 or 3 years experience themselves, and then they're trying to lead the new core members who are coming in. So you see that this is a network where they're able to pay people maybe less money, demand a lot. It seems like if you are a TFA teacher, that there are many, many opportunities for you if you are what core members shared with me, a, quote, good core member. They felt that they were learning to think like a core member versus think like a teacher. And that is part of the reason why that there is this opportunity for people to go in, be Teach for America, go to law school, go to graduate school, then eventually come in and be the Commissioner of Education for the state of Tennessee, the district superintendent in school districts, you know, around the country. And that is, to me, troubling because they have a very weak education base. The base is more, this is our ultimate goal. And it's fitting into the means of deprofessionalizing teachers, eliminating funds for public schools that come from the federal government. And I'm very concerned, especially with children who have special needs.
That was Barbara Veltri. I also spoke with Diane Ravitch about the connections among the TFA pipeline and the big money and interest supporting that pipeline. It seems that from the way TFA presents itself, from its promotional materials and what I keep reading, that they say they're preparing future leaders. There's not a focus so much on preparing future teachers, but future leaders.
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting about Teach for America is that its goals have changed. When it first started as an organization, the fundamental idea was that Teach for America would recruit young people to serve in rural and urban districts and schools that were very poor and that had vacancies that could not find anyone to teach science or advanced math or courses where a college student could come in and do the job because no one else was available. So that was the idea. What it has evolved into, however, is no longer we'll send you these teachers for schools in need, but rather this is a fast track to a high-level position in education. So, for example, there are today Teach for America graduates, alumni, very young, who are state commissioners, one being in Louisiana, where there's a 30-plus-year-old Teach for America graduate, John White, who's now the state commissioner of Louisiana, running Bobby Jindal's ultra-conservative destroy a public education agenda. There's also a Teach for America alum as Commissioner of Education in Tennessee. That's Michelle Rhee's ex-husband. Michelle Rhee, of course, is a Teach for America alumna. So Teach for America looks to people like Michelle Rhee and Kevin Huffman and John White and says, join us, and within a relatively short period of time, when you're still in, even in your 20s or your 30s, you could be running a school district, running a state. So it is a leadership development program, partly because it's networking. It's networking with very powerful organizations. All you have to do is look at the board of directors of Teach for America, and it's an astonishing array of some of the biggest corporations, some of the biggest media figures, some of the most powerful people from foundations. And once you get into that network, you know, you may have your future made for you.
It seems that this kind of pipeline is becoming a very popular place that a lot of big ed reform money is going right now.
One of the amazing aspects to Teach for America today is that it is so unbelievably financially successful. I calculated roughly that in the last year alone, it had collected over $200 million, $50 million from the U.S. Department of Education, $100 million from a consortium of big foundations, $49.5 million from the ultra-conservative Walton Foundation.
And what are all of these big funders, and what are they getting out of all of this money they're investing in TFA?
I think what the big funders see in TFA is an opportunity, first of all, to crush the ed schools, because the ed schools are not part of the TFA pipeline. I mean, ultimately, the TFA students may go to an ed school if they want to get certification. They may be doing it at the same time as they're teaching, but it completely disrupts them as a necessary part of the pipeline into teaching. So it's a way of getting rid of the ed schools or minimizing their importance and making them very insignificant in the process. It's also a way of putting an emphasis in a teaching profession onto having very young people who come for 2 or 3 years and leave. This is the TFA model. The TFA recruits are only requested to sign for 2 years. So long term, it creates a revolving door, a churn of young people who will never stay around long enough to get a pension, never stay around long enough to use expensive health benefits. And it's in some ways, I believe the conservative foundations are looking at TFA as a way of cutting costs, because they come in at the entry level. Obviously, they're the lowest paid teachers. Very right-wing funders see Teach for America as a clever way to crack the ed schools, crack the unions, eliminate seniority, eliminate tenure, and turn teaching into not a profession, but a revolving door where young people come and go and make few demands.
This is Education Radio. That was Diane Ravitch speaking about the main goal of Teach for America having nothing to do with producing good teachers. Diane also talks about why there is so much money being invested in TFA. Although, I think it's important to point out that while Diane characterizes this money coming from, quote, conservative or, quote, right-wing organizations, that in reality, TFA is being supported, both financially and ideologically, across the political spectrum. Next, we return to the story of second-year TFA core member Jameson Brewer. Here's Education Radio producer Tim Scott and I talking with Jameson about TFA's use of a social justice framework to uphold their neoliberal education reform agenda.
When you listen to Wendy Kopp talk about TFA, she uses a language of social justice. She insinuates that TFA is part of this new wave of a civil rights movement. And she actually says at one point, if not us, then who? It is all up to us, as if TFA is going to be the savior.
Right. And, you know, Diane Ravitch had a piece in the Huffington Post, I think it was yesterday, speaking about just the sheer title of Wendy Kopp's newest book implies that they're the answer. And, you know, during the Summer Institute, there's a week called Induction. And that's where core members are shipped off to their regional sites. For me, it was Atlanta. And the entire week, at least in my case, at the Atlanta induction, had this narrative of they talked about the civil rights movement of the 60s and said, but it hasn't ended, which I agree, but the rhetoric was, you're the front lines of the civil rights movement. And it had this air of arrogance that it's Teach for America that's leading the way.
And it's interesting because education reform policies and education reformers, such as TFA, are grounded within market logic, and that the market and the business model is the basis of the new civil rights movement.
Right. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to get a copy of Wendy Kopp's thesis where she laid out the groundwork for her organization. And it's, in fact, on the very first page where she mentioned she's at a business conference and they're charged with, as future business leaders of America, to fix schooling. And, you know, people who have no experience in pedagogy or methods, they somehow decided that it were teachers that were the problem and teachers that needed to be fixed. And I agree with you, Tim, that Teach for America is very much behind, obviously they're behind the KIPP movement, They're certainly a major player in the full privatization of the schools in New Orleans post-Katrina. They embody neoliberal ideals of what schools should and should not be.
Could you speak a little bit more maybe about what those ideals are? So explicitly those connections, how does TFA play into this education reform agenda?
Sure. Neoliberalism is interested in hyper-accountability, and I've spoken on that as far as their insistence that core members and their prospective teachers are the sole predictor of student success. Neoliberalism and Teach for America are very much interested in testing and the standardization of testing and the privatization of schools. Core members are required to track the student data of standardized tests, not only in their classroom, but also everything is geared towards whatever the state test is. So here in Georgia, if you're a middle school teacher or a core member, your worth is judged on how good your students do on the CRCT. And anytime that they report this data, informally or formally, it's always, my students did this last year, indicating, look at how bad the other teacher was, but look how great my students are on the test. My first program director, he truly is a great personal friend. He's mentioned in Wendy Kopp's latest book about the increased scores that he posted and also the college acceptance rate of his students. But what it fails to show is a lot of them are not staying in college because they were taught to the test. They were taught to the test because somehow raising these test scores for Teach for America, it legitimizes what they're doing. And this neoliberal idea that testing and standardization, in my opinion, is to produce formulaic human beings that can be controlled to do whatever somebody else wants them to do.
So essentially, Teach for America is training technicians to be able to manage classrooms in the service of neoliberal education reform. And then and it seems like the primary mission of TFA is then to groom and indoctrinate kind of like an army of future leaders, policymakers, and scholars who will then influence the further implementation of this neoliberal education model.
Right. In fact, just this past year, I'm not familiar if it's on a national level, but here in the Atlanta Corps, they just started a new thing called the Principal Pipeline. In fact, I was asked by the executive director of Atlanta to consider doing the Principal Pipeline, where you would be sent off to Columbia, and long story short, in a year and a half or 2 years, you're now principal. And I forget the number, but the Atlanta Corps has a dramatic goal of how many principals they want that are Teach for America alumni. I was also asked to consider running for either the Atlanta Public School Board or the Gwinnett County Public School Board. Their goal is either 10 or 20. I apologize, I don't know the number, but their goal is to have either 10 or 20 board members in the region within the next handful of years. So I agree. Their point is to somehow give people who've had 18 hours of teaching training 2 years in the classroom, where really, in a lot of cases, crash and burn, but on the other side, these policymakers, these principals, these politicians that can say that they're TFA alumni, well, somehow gives them credibility that they, quote-unquote, slummed it and taught for 2 years, and so somehow they're the expert on the issue, when in fact, I think that couldn't be further from the truth.
Right, and while they've had 18 hours of teaching, and they don't have that experience, what they do have is that indoctrination into neoliberal education reform model.
Right.
This entails a significant level of obedience from when it comes to who's identified to be recruited, as well as how core members are trained to then continue on beyond Teach for America to follow this model and to maintain the discipline of ensuring that it is further enacted.
And they do that through their recruiting process. I met so many core members over my time that simply said, I had no intention, I didn't even know what Teach for America was, but somebody got my number because I was the president of STA. And so I agree that they intentionally seek out leaders that are leaders on their college campus, not because, of course, they say that they've studied teaching and somehow have the recipe for reproducing good teachers. And they say that that's people with good leadership skills. Well, I don't know that that's necessarily the case, but I agree with you, Tim, that if you recruit these people who are leaders, you give them somehow credibility in the education world by having them teach for 2 years. I agree with you that they're on a natural path towards politicians and whatever the case may be anyway. And so if somehow TFA can surrogate that and attach themselves on there, then they can pull the strings from behind the curtain.
That was Jameson Brewer, currently a second-year TFA core member, talking about TFA's claim that they are part of the new civil rights movement and how their approach to civil rights, in reality, embraces the neoliberal education reform agenda that includes an imposition of market logic on public schools.
As we near the close of the show, we turn again to Kevin Kumashiro, who talks about TFA's hijacking of a social justice discourse and how this is linked to the broader goals of neoliberal education reform.
Kevin, can you talk about how corporate education reform, how they've co-opted the language of social justice to make it seem that they are the new social movement in education, the social justice movement? For example, like Wendy Kopp's book came out in 2010 called One Day All Children. It's being marketed as the blueprint for the new civil rights movement.
Yeah, that's a great example of how we need to be very skeptical of the kinds of language, the kinds of terms, the kinds of concepts that we hear coming at us from the media, from our leaders, from reformers that are very persuasive, right? They're very compelling. You hear, oh, this is the new civil rights movement, and it's easy to say, yes, here's a program that's going to intervene. It's all about urban education. It's all about serving the disadvantaged. And I think we absolutely should be skeptical, because one of the interesting things about Teach for America is who is funding it, right? A lot of the conservative foundations, a lot of people who historically have challenged the gains of the civil rights movement, but even today are doing so, are backing an organization that's saying that they're the new civil rights movement of this generation. Why do I say that there's this kind of powerful contradiction? I think that public schools, we think of it as equalizing the playing field and offering equal educational opportunity for all people. But I think looking historically at the role of public education in this country, we see that public schools were never really about equalizing the playing field, right? They were created for only certain groups in society. And as public schools were forced to integrate, we came up with more indirect and subtle ways to separate students. In other words, schools have always played a sorting function to sort students in society, and they continue to do so today in just perhaps less obvious, less direct ways. And a lot of people who are investing millions, if not billions of dollars, are actually fueling the tendency of schools to continue to sort. And so examples would be the funding of initiatives that actually lead to greater sorting, greater differentiation of students, such as things like how we think about holding schools accountable, right? So the whole accountability movement, which is high-stakes testing, merit pay for teachers, turnaround schools. There are billions of dollars being invested in these movements, right? From the mega philanthropies like the Gates and the Broads Foundations, as well as the smaller, more historically conservative foundations. And what is the actual impact of that kind of investment? Well, what we see is that, first of all, when schools are showing that their students are struggling in terms of their test scores, the result is actually a more narrowing of the curriculum, right? We see more and more pressure to do test prep during class time so that students presumably can do better on tests. Well, that's just one example of how the reforms that we're seeing are actually leading our schools, the schools that are struggling, to look even less like the best schools in this country, right? Because the best schools in this country, the schools where the corporate elite, the political elite are sending their children, are not schools that spend an enormous amount of time on test prep. They're actually schools that have an incredibly rich and broad curriculum, right? Same with the movement to attack the public sector and to weaken collective bargaining. Well, some of the best schools in this country are actually places that have unionized teachers. And you can go down the list, right? We say, oh, take away the arts, take away recess, take away independent study hall, because that's distracting from real learning. When what we see is actually the best schools have all of those things. And in fact, one more example would be, we think, oh, research-proven curriculum, right? Standardized curriculum is what we should be implementing across all schools. Well, the top schools in the world, you know, some of the schools that we hold up, such as in Finland, right, actually have curriculum that's developed at the local level with teachers who really know the communities and students that they're working with. They're not curriculums that are imposed from above and standardized across all. So the point here is that the reforms that are being funded with millions and billions of dollars from both the mega philanthropies and the conservative foundations, and of course our governments, are actually pushing forward reforms that further differentiate schools, that actually make the struggling schools look even less like the kinds of school that we want to see every child attending. And this should really raise the question, well, why is it that people who would never send their students to that kind of a school is investing so much money for the masses in our country to attend those schools? Is it really to offer everyone the same education? Or is it at its core to bolster the role that schools have played in sorting students? I think that's the question that we should be asking, and I think the evidence is getting clearer and clearer that it's the latter.
That was Kevin Kumashiro on how we must think critically about the language that TFA and other education reform organizations use to further their agenda. As we wrap up this exploration of Teach for America, we want to return to where we started, with an attempt to disrupt the discourse that TFA and other ed reformers employ to manufacture public acquiescence to the imposition of an agenda that seeks to further consolidate knowledge, wealth, and power for a few at the expense of the many. To us, some of the most jaw-dropping claims that TFA makes, and it's Wendy Kopp who makes these claims, have to do with the way they purport to be an essential force in working toward educational equity for poor students of color, basically an essential part of a new civil rights movement that is grounded in the twisted logic that market forces and private profit provide the only pathway to justice and equality. Instead of working to strengthen and expand the democratic and equalizing function of universal public education and other public goods that are essential components of a robust democracy, TFA and its partners are working to protect and reinforce the status quo, a worldview where the ideology of social Darwinism reigns supreme. Education Radio is produced by the Education Radio Collective. Check out our blog at education-radio.blogspot.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter.
Do you think that we don't know that you're up to no good when you're telling lies? They say milk does a body good. How so? It causes disease. Don't trust me? Read about BGH and RGF-1. The dairy industry has a stricken poison. Got milk? Better get. How about? Got cancer? Got a sick prostate? And you're looking for answers? And why we trust the FDA to protect us? These mad cows are milking us all the way to the bank. From cell phones to pharmaceuticals. Children force vaccinations that carry plague and chemicals. Corporate thugs push drugs like evangelists push miracles. Monsanto, Bayer, Procter & Gamble.